Inside Nigeria, keeping you informed on what matters.
Welcome to the last edition of Inside Nigeria Leadership Edition this Friday, April 8, 2022. My name is Winnie Fodikoba. It's my pleasure to be hosting you on today's program. With me in the studio is our political affairs analyst and Friday Talent Man. My name is Mr. Matthew. We have four papers for review. We're talking about Nigeria's most official newspaper, Leadership, the sister publication, National Economy, This Day, and Vanguard. We are starting off with Leadership. Let's see what Leadership is dealing with this Friday. President Muhammad Buhari shocked states, local government areas. The first new sharing formula. PMB shock states local government areas. The first new sharing formula. ROMAFC proposes 45.17% for federal government, states 29.7%, local government areas 21.04%. Presidents approval to borrow more for 7.35 trillion budget deficits. President Muhammad Buhari short states local government areas the first new sharing formula. ROMAFC proposes 45.7% for federal government, states 29.7% and 21.04% for local government areas. President seeks approval to borrow more for 7.35 trillion naira budget deficit. That is the headline story on Leadership this Friday, 8 April 2022. President seeks approval to borrow more.
Yeah, to fund the 2022 budget, particularly the component that we will crowd subsidy, that require 4 trillion into payment of fuel subsidy. And with that, some people are saying the subsidies have become unsustainable. But we've always maintained that until such a time that the government can find a solution to our energy insecurity, they should do all that they can to make sure that we buy petrol at a price that is reasonable, a price that's affordable, and we have the access to this very important commodity. In fact, at the current price, it is even too high compared to the average import in Nigeria. So the government should just do all it can. And we hope that the incoming government will now take more lasting steps to make sure that we're able to refine at home and spend at a price that's appropriate for an oil producing country like Nigeria. But back to the lead story, PMB shock states. Well, is it really a shock? Well, I think that first and foremost, it is good that the Revenue Mobilization and Fiscal Commission has come up with this, you know.
But don't you think that even with this new sharing formula is not what Nigerians were expecting? But you still see that the gap between the federal government and state is still so wide. Don't understand why, sir.
That's because, as we still speak, the government has a lot of responsibilities. And maybe that's why, for the first time, I'm willing to give the president some benefit of doubt when actually made the point that he would wait for the outcome of the constitutional amendment before sending this as an executive bill to the National Assembly to enact into a law. So I think that is we are still in the process of reviewing the allocation formula, which was last done in 1992.
Yes.
So I think we're still on course. So let us see the outcome of the constitutional amendment as by. Because if the other sub-amendments and the fragment is left with maybe fewer responsibilities that manage house now, ahead then, there might even be a need to readjust in line with what you observe and give more to the states.
Because we are talking about judiciary autonomy too.
And all of that responsibilities. So if So I think it is quite important. The president is right to say that we should wait for the outcome of the constitutional amendment so that we will now take a second look at the proposal.
Yeah.
If there are areas that need to be adjusted,
right.
If not, we can now send the National Assembly as complementing the outcome of the constitutional amendment. So I think it is still in order. The first important step has been taken, which is the commission is about small with a review. And at least they're giving more now, even with this, for the states and government. And reduce a bit from the federal
government. They just reduce a bit, and it's just about
I think it's a step towards the right direction, even if it's a small step. So, again, I'm very much inclined to agree with the president that the constitutional amendment outcome will determine. Because, again, you see, our problem is not so much about the revenue sharing formula, about the utilization. With the current structure, it should give even more to the states. There's no guarantee that it should be translated into good governance.
I agree with you because it's clear that, I agree with you because for some of us that maybe we're on the feet following this around the world, it's clear that some of these activities that states and local government are supposed to be carrying out in their states or domain, the federal government is still doing something.
The federal government is still more efficient.
Primary healthcare center.
Primary healthcare, primary schools.
Under the purview of local government, the federal government will still be the one to buy.
So I think we need to strengthen the other units of government first for deploying more resources. And I hope that the constitutional amendment will bring up progressive legislation that will strengthen and make the second and third tier of government very, very efficient and be able to effectively deliver good governance. At this level we are in now, I do not support any form of increase in revenue to states. No. Because the one they are receiving is not translating into dividends of democracy, but we have good governance. So I don't even, it's not something I even want to think about. In fact, the federal government has been far, far, far more effective, more efficient in all these years. Compared to the other tiers of government. Yes. And so we don't need to look at these things emotionally, we need to look at it in objectively. So I agree 100% with the president. For the first time in a long time, I agree with the president on the position that we need to see through the constitutional amendment. But my worry here is also that the president didn't send any executive bill to actually help advance the course of the constitutional amendment in a way that would correct some defects in the federating units. And so my worry is, I hope he's committed, I hope the president is actually committed to one, a slightly restructured federation through constitutional amendment, and so will be willing to also send this proposal to the National Assembly for legislation to give fiscal backing to the outcome of that restructuring. So I hope he has the political will to see all of this through. Otherwise, in principle, on paper, what he has said is the right thing. And let me also say this finally. It is important that the president do not, at this time of his tenure, dying nowadays in his tenure, it will not be politically correct for the president to tamper with any structure now. So if you ask me, it will be good to defer this to the incoming administration. You know why? If the president does anything to change the formula of revenue allocation now, radically, the incoming government, particularly at the center, might have another bite to fail. Say, well, the volume of resources available to the federal government could be reduced before we came in. It's not the same reason why the last administration, the president, the Jonathan administration, did not sign into law the constitutional amendment that was made by the 7th Assembly before he left, because it came after he actually, it was like after he lost election. The idea was to amend the constitution now in this manner that reduces the powers of the executive, the gross power. The incompetent will feel that you have reduced the power that you had And he doesn't even have her some powers to be the kind of person who I wanted to be. So it is, I think it's better to allow the incoming government to, on its own, pioneer the process of adjusting the revenue formula so that they will take responsibility for all their own actions. We don't see another blame game in the next 8 years going forward. What I say is your opinion. So let's, I think it's good to leave this in abeyance. Yes. On to the next arbitration. I believe that, look.
Just like he did with the PIA, the trillion.
No, he signed the trillion as well.
And then he also declared the implementation.
No, the final of the implementation was because of some. In the truth is, you see, the PIA was not the silver bullet law we took off. I don't know so much more about the law governing the industry. Yeah. What we needed in that industry was simply strong administrative procedure that will make it more efficient. And again, let me say this, if the government will not participate in the initial production, nobody can be afraid. I challenge anybody to go around the whole of Europe and Southeast Asia. Most of the European economies, up until very recently, post-war economies, were state capitalist enterprises. Governments had direct involvement. So I don't know how you hope that somebody can be victory. I know after they signed the PIA, companies are diversified from Nigeria. So the aluminum, for example, has shout out the fire now that the block he acquired, he can't utilize it. So it tells you that you cannot leave these things to the so-called president. The government has a role to play in security of the environment, tightening regulations, and participating in the shield. So PIA was not the silver bullet that was going to solve the problem. Or should have some problem. No. That's why they had to defy some matters because there were defects in the law. It was like incompatible with the reality of ground. So that's a different matter. But this is very fundamental. It has to do with money. We don't want the next one to come out and say, I don't have enough money to work. I mean, it's bad enough that the government, this government complains that they left the bankrupt, they inherited the bankrupt system. So we don't want the government to say, I don't have money to work at all. So let the next government come. If the next president under whatever platform campaigns, for example, for devolution of powers, campaigns for increase in revenue allocation to states and government, and reduction in federal government, and pledges to also lead the move towards devolving powers, or what you can call restructuring of some sort, that president should now engage with his own assembly and his own revenue mobilization and fiscal allocation commission to come up with their own model of what they want within the first few months of their inauguration. I mean, for me, within the first quarter, come up with what you want, send to the National Assembly for concurrence. And once that is done, so you know that you are taking responsibility for what you have actually designed for yourself.
Yes, and that points us to what you just mentioned. What is that government, they always give it a shaky bit because we spend so much money. I think over and many billions are always projected for constitution amendment and national assembly. At the end of the day, it's not part of the law. It becomes a new process in every government.
So that's because
for instance, now this outgoing government, they just sent it to state house for assembly.
That's because, you see, let me tell you something about the National Assembly and this perennial attempt to amend the constitution. It has become a meal ticket for members of that committee of the National Assembly. Something they do
every year.
And for me, it's even an abuse of our constitutional democracy. It is an abuse of our constitutional processes. We don't have to amend the laws all the time. What we require to do now is actually to prevent this. I keep saying there's nothing so wrong with our constitution. What we need is proper implementation of the spirit and the letters of the constitution. That's all we need. But of course, somebody just wants to get busy, and so they always come up with phantom. But in a proper democracy, and this is where the rule of the political party comes in, the question will be, what is the agenda? What is the legislative agenda of the APC? A party is supposed to have a legislative agenda. That is, the party will look at the constitution as it is today and decide that, look, for us to effectively deal with our challenges, we need amendments in certain areas of the constitution. Fine. Now that becomes a campaign tool, something you are going to campaign with in all your constituencies. So, anybody standing on the platform of, say, PDP or APC, we campaign with something like this. we'll get on board. We're going to raise allocation from this level to this level to, and now we'll look at the grassroots. It's a big campaign thing. As when they voted in and the majority of Nigerians voted in that party that campaigns on such an agenda, and come into power, either in the legislature or in the executive, right? It's expected of you to now put in place the process to do this. So it becomes your legislative agenda to do this. I don't need to do too much. If you tampering on the question, it's okay. Now, but if you don't win the election, you don't win. I mean, maybe Nigerians are not ready for this. So it becomes a minority agenda ending. So the other party, whatever agenda they have, even if it means saying want to increase revenue allocation to federal government, and they win, so it's so be it. So there has to be a legislative agenda. So that will guide the legislators in the assembly to now vote along the legislative agenda that brought us into power.
Exactly.
But it doesn't exist. Political parties are nothing but just platforms to win election. They don't guide the campaign. They don't have a central message. They don't have a theme. Nothing. It's just free for all. So now when they get to an assembly and they make you the deputy select president or the deputy speaker, then you embark on constitutional amendments that last throughout the tenure. Yeah. And it is done in a haphazard manner. Somebody from different government, even though it belongs to the same party, will come on another agenda. So people came with the proposal that they would change the names of the localities in the two states.
We saw it.
So it tells you that. So, I mean, that's this whole problem. That the names are something like multiple language. I want to sound like another language. So it tells you that there is no legitimate agenda. Somebody comes on the table and brings all sorts of, you know, inanities. And that's why sometimes the presidents or the head of the executive do not assent to such amendment, because it's haphazard, it's not coordinated, it's not oriented toward national development. So you can't sign such a thing into law. And that's why sometimes they do not sign it. And I don't say anything different from what is happening now.
And what they also think that during the process of the constitutional amendment, most left-hand lawmakers bring their personal,
very personal
issues into it. For instance, state policing, that I think when it went wrong, most of the governors were for it. And PNB said, no, he doesn't support it. And they removed it. So during the conference of House speakers of House, they even raised alarm. They were angry that why should state police be involved? So how do you doctor it when personal issues come into
play? Exactly. That's why you need to have a party. Even the party campaigns with the state policy, the president, the governors, the decisions are bound by the social contract they enter into with people to implement head to work from head to without. Is that something you should? You shouldn't go back and begin to titter over. You know, it's something you must do. If that's the reason why you're voted.
So it shouldn't be based on personal prejudices.
No. You don't have a right. But the people are not very important. The truth is, in principle, when legislators, through bipartisan arrangement, pass a piece of legislation into law, ordinarily, president has no choice but to sign it, except such a decision does not enjoy bipartisan support. At least, members of this party, the minority that has, it's possible to have a president from a party and the parliament is dominated by the present party, it's a possibility. Except the members of the party in the parliament do not agree with that. And maybe they have to campaign to the people based on disagreeing with this agenda. And the president cannot explore executive power to frustrate that or to get a compromise. Fine. But if the APC and the PDP, as it is in Nigeria, come together actually to pass a legislation into law, the president has no moral right or authority to reject it, because that's what the people want. The only thing the president can do is, as the leader of the party, he goes back to the political party. He calls a meeting. They have national caucus meetings. You see, your next meeting that you do, you don't have to come and discuss how to go and sell forms and win election. Your next meeting is supposed to be a policy formulating place where you sit down and explore all issues like this and come to agreement on what we need to do as a government. That's what you do at NEC. Why governors attend NEC meeting? Party chairman in the state attend NEC meeting. The president is a member of the NEC and some other senior members of the party. That's where you discuss and arrive at your agenda for national development. So from that time, you go to the NEC to revisit it, adjust it, and continue. That's what you do at NEC.
But I don't think Nigeria's political party has such.
Don't you? That's what a NEC. That's it. No party has no party has it. That's what your NEC is supposed to be about. Then at the national caucus level, it's also the same. It's development or agenda for the development of the country. So when you arrive at such, so if you have any problem with say state police, this is where you're going to get them to buy into your agenda. That's okay. As the leader of this party, you have trusted me to be your president. I do not think Nigeria is right for state police, for social and so on. So stop it down for now. But as a substitute, there are some things I will do from the executive branch through some administrative instruments to fill the gap for this same thing. It's that we discuss, you debate it. However, if at that same meeting they refuse to go your way, you have to bow to them. But if you're able to put your argument, if indeed you agree, you are not your acoustic, I put it forward. I will see reason with you. They follow. Democracy is beautiful if only you participate well. It is beautiful. It is God's own decreed way of government. It allows participation. So this is what should be happening at next meetings. Not election and how to win. You know, not what next is supposed to be. NEC is a policy arena where you go and discuss policy, party programs, get feedbacks, adjustment, and agree on an agenda, and then convert it to the national. So we agree as a party. This is what we want to do going forward. But that's not the case in Nigeria. It's not the case.
On the leadership principle, we are moving to the party. Vanga has a disturbing story on his headline this morning. Let's see what Vanga is saying on his cover. Vanga, the terrorist to federal government, talk to us or we kill all 167 captives. Terrorist to FG, talk to us or we kill all 167 captives. 167 passengers still in captivity. Says government should hasten to meet us before we turn this place into an abattoir. Abductors have collected 250 million naira ransom so far. Injured air soldier Sergeant Funtua dies. Pastors protest killings in Kaduna, demand massive bombing of bandits. High profile tourist commander surrenders defense headquarters. Bank of Agriculture acting MD allegedly paid 100 million naira to secure release. These are potpourries of stories on Vanguard newspaper. Underneath the headline story, terrorists to federal government talk to us or we kill all 167 captives. So disturbing.
Yes, I watched the video and the attack on the train, the Abuja Kaduna train. It's a very sophisticated operation. And there are indications now that there's now an infiltration or like convergence between Anshwa and the regular bandit around the central part of Nigeria, to which Kaduna is part of the axis.
Yeah,
central part of Nigeria. From Kaduna to Niger to FCT, to be natural. Yeah. It appears as though Anshwa may have announced its presence. This attack, especially because now, if you look at the mode of operation, this was able to derail track off the train, and they attacked people inside and abducted money. Now, there are elements of bandits among the attackers, but what you will see is that there's this professional touch, professional terrorist touch to use of videos. And most importantly, for eyewitnesses, they said you were chanting in Allahu Akbar, Turban before Adan Shuti School at the time. So you know that Ishwab, they carry out their criminal activities in the name of religion, and they are very, very, very formidable in the field and hope to come back. But it's believed that a lot of them have gone for prison in foreign, in other terrorist jurisdictions, and some of them people with prior military experience. They are just a potent terrorist group. Secondly, they came very close. The regular bandits do not use their tools to report their abductees. They walk here several kilometers, and that is their own specialty. But this was still that there's been that a full amount of them that are not people that have been justified with working long distances in their cultural occupation. So it tells you that there is a convergence, there is an external force coming into the country. And that's why they go. We don't know where they will strike now. That is what the government should be thinking about now. Where else should they strike? Because this is becoming more and more daring. Now, what they want is money, essentially. But I also believe that there could be something that they also want. Some have said there are elements of Ansaru, and that Ansaru is another, is like jihadi headsman group. And that some of the members are being held by the government and they want them to leave. A lot of conspiracy theories. But one thing I know that they want is money. And they begin a lot of money from the abductees. A lot of money. Somebody said somewhere that they estimated that this will go to $1 billion at the end of ransom. Yes. At the end of the ransom payment. The of the
and they
said
they have collected 450 ransom.
And they are very and they have and have 167 students, including very high profile and then high profile. That's we don't want to be naming them now because of their identity or the don't engage with them. So it tells you that there's something these people are up to. And they are making a lot of money from this activity. And why is this still going on? Number one, because of money. President in this instance, is also the commander-in-chief, has not shown the political way of the platform. This pattern of insecurity. I'm not the only one who has said it. A lot of pundits have said it. Why is the government seemingly soft on this report? How is it possible for this people to be comfortable enough to do video and say it? A lot of fine lines have been blocked that they've not linked their NIM to that scene. And yet this people are still operating and making calls. What is happening? So of what use is the linkage between SIM and NIM if you cannot track the calls people are making to get transfer? Of what use? Why punish other Nigerians? Yes. So there's something we are not doing. The governor of Kaduna has expressed frustration. He said, look, we know where they are. The government is refusing to come, but we made this allegation.
Yes.
We need to take that solution. Why is our president refusing to come back to put that kidnapping in Kaduna? And what is it that this will say that they know that they want? And that they should do the network. What is the bond? What is the relationship between these people and the people in authority? Why are you not bombarding them? You bought to Kano Jet. So what have I done to Kano Jet? And why is the president refusing? Oh,
sorry, since they have been labeled and tagged as a terrorist.
Even beyond to Kano Jet, why is our president resisting every attempt to restructure or reconfigure our national security strategy to allow for things like state policy, to allow for civil armament? Even vigilantes have been prescribed. In what other area? Why is it that we are not doing anything about it? Why does this seem as anything that will help out the situation is being discouraged? Why? So I think at this point, it's no longer about discussing the strategy or how to combat terrorism. It is to focus on the political will or lack of it. What is happening? We need to now know. And I want to ask, on whose side is our president and commander in chief? We're not seeing the kind of anger we see in the display when it comes to alcohol, when it comes to Sunday Boho and the Urbanization movement. We don't have that kind of anger. If the president can actually order the abduction of Nnamdi Kanu from Kenya, why is it now difficult to abduct people like Jogo Gide, people like Ali Kachala, people like Bello Chudu, and other terrorist campaigns? I'm bringing to justice. If Sunday Boho didn't kill one person, one person. The only thing was that he protested the killing of his own people. I was trying to escape from the country, was intercepted in Benin Republic, and because of diplomatic, cultural, and diplomatic effort by the Yoruba nation, contested with this in Benin. If they're able to go that far, raid his home, arrest people, kill people in his house, doing that, how can I not see the same thing when it comes to this? What is happening? At this point, I just have to begin to ask questions. Something is not, I don't know. No, no, literally not. And we need to begin to ask people that are in charge of our security. What is happening? Why are you not doing what you're supposed to be doing? Now, we come up with the program of repentant Boko Haram. And we criticize the dancers. Yes, we can take prisoners of war and not kill them, but we must wear prisoners until the end of the war. You can't take prisoners of war into the fight. You have to be exactly enough therapy. Because 6 months in your so-called radicalization camp, not enough to radicalize the radicalized person. But we have been releasing this opportunity. And the war on terror in Burundi has been made effective. So we need to have what sort of strategies that. Now, we've seen offers of amnesty to bandits and narco-terrorists. For so long. We should see the government categorizing the terrorist attacks in communities Benin, Lekki, Taraba, as former harbor structures. But the South Coast has decided to come up with a model because we resisted by the federal government. So you need to ask, you can't protect people and want to protect themselves and you're resisting it. What is happening? What is it? So we need to begin to ask this question. Mr. President, what is happening? We need answers. What is our country? What about our country? Even with this, we must say, federal government is not, we don't see that anger, we're not seeing that, we're not seeing that, you know, that determination once and for all to cause that. We're not seeing it, we're still not seeing it. You're not seeing it. People are dying, soldiers are dying, children are dying.
It's really sad and very, very unfortunate.
Very unfortunate.
Let's go on a break. When we come back, we'll continue this report with you. Don't go away, stay tuned.
Inside Nigeria, keeping you informed on what matters.
Welcome back. The program still is Inside Nigeria on Leadership Television. With me in the studio is a public affairs analyst, Professor Chief Nakil, and I'm Winifred Debo. Our next report review is our sister publication, National Economic. National Economic's headline is Federal Government's Shift to Local Borrowing May Eliminate Forex Fluctuations. Federal Government's Shift to Local Borrowing May Eliminate Forex Fluctuations. Move to bridge 7.4 trillion naira budget deficit will strengthen capital markets, say experts. Move to bridge 7.4 trillion naira budget deficit will strengthen capital markets, according to experts. That's on National Economy this Friday.
You know, sometimes those we call experts actually, you begin to wonder. Now, the idea is that the government borrows, you know, from within. It's going to increase. I think at the rate, the period that we have announced was 12% per annum interest rate. So it means it is strengthening the capital market actually. But that's something the experts are not putting into public. Where will the money, where will the government get the money to pay the interest rate or pay back the debts in the long, in fact, even not just in the long run, in the midterm? Because as long as Nigeria is still not having enough revenue from export or external receipts, the Nigerian will run the risk of defaulting on its obligations to local borrowers, local lenders, I mean. And when that happens, the economy, the capital market will not be strong, it will collapse. the government will collapse it. So I think this is a one, this is a red light. Red is like a one, is a danger sign that we're no longer even able to access loans overseas. China is no longer giving us loans. I'm sure Europeans are also no longer giving us. So that's good to look inward. And somebody is thinking that it's a good thing for us. What's the government before? And that is the fear of those that the lenders have put that are no longer giving us loans. I think this will require. But they have seen that we do not have a revenue source that can service these loans or repay them back. People make the allusion sometimes that America is also an indebted nation. And I say, no, the difference between the American indebtedness and Nigerian indebtedness is this. It's like America is like a businessman who has a lot of activities as well. And so people are running after him. You say, can I borrow you this money to put in your business? So you make your profit as usual, you are gaining from it. That's the kind of debt America is holding. America is not borrowing to finance its budget. America is not borrowing to service debt. America is borrowing to do business. America's economy is the largest economy in the world. It is money net to net with China as the largest exporter in the whole world. So its economy is profitable. So when you give them money, you get your return. But the banks will take for them money and people to sleep. Maybe you can make money. That's the difference. And we don't compare ourselves with such countries. We only have one major source of foreign exchange. Crude oil sales. Crude. And until we begin the process of diversifying our source of foreign exchange, this problem, maybe one day we will not just bring on capital measures, somebody from individuals in Nigeria to finance government for you to get there. We've raised taxes as well, because you cannot raise taxes in a recessed economy and afford to gain revenue. You cannot. Because you need people to grant and all to pay tax. So the force of the prosperity is create that buoyancy. How do you create it? It is to link your local economy to an export competitive market. Look, we can go round and round. If we don't go back to that, the basic, we will not get out of this debt trap. For example, a farmer in Benin that's cooperating no rain is going to sit down. All he needs to do to go to farm, the security is there, the infrastructure is there. He goes in, head to his farm, harvests his orange. And as the best thing like this, the value coming is for the value chain of taking it from him, processing it and exporting it, and paying his money. Once that orange finds its way first into the Nigerian market as a substitute for potential of processed fruit for a product, and then we export it into the European market, for example, it means the man in Benin, he doesn't need to come to Africa, he will stay in his village in Benin and be a millionaire, an orange farmer millionaire. The same thing with all other endowments in Nigeria. If you do not tie them to an export competitive economy that brings in forex into the big friends of all the country, you keep having this problem. As we speak, none of other sorts of the economy on crude oil sales is export competitive. We're going to make efforts in entertainment. Entertainment is really bringing us forex. Exactly. But even at that, government is moving and support the same way that American government supporting Hollywood. But if you look at it, it's just in the real perspective that is helping that sector. That today is now trying to export cement and fertilizer into both African markets and even America. We need to do more of that. Today, China and Europe, is trying to divest from gas supplies from Russia. We are able to fill the gap because most of the Niger Delta state governments have not invested in critical infrastructure in the oil and gas industry enough to export gas to Europe. So how do you expect to achieve self-sufficiency and reduce your budget deficit and your indebtedness without being productive? And the way we can be productive is from government to kill and repeat. And I reiterate and I emphasize, it's for government to roll up its sleeves and get involved. At this stage of our development, we need government to get involved. government has to get involved. Obadan has been factory is located in Kogi State. We are country. Obadan made or added to the fortunes of Dangote. It's a very well run facility that produces cement daily, but efficiently run. But the profit goes to Dangote because we did not have the foresight or the efficient government at the state level to run a similar enterprise. So that profit will not come into the state as revenue. We didn't do that. We're still not doing that. We're looking for tax. So it's everything across the country.
Yes.
Governors have the luxury to buy SUVs for MEA because they're not investing money in enterprises. So you can afford to buy SUVs and cars because they're not that. You know what, also that's a problem. So one of the keys to actually getting out of this problem, trying to expand the conversation beyond what the efforts are saying, you need states to choose specialize in one or two export competitive commodities or services, each of the participants of the division, either in clusters or individually. So we need to economically reconfigure our federation units into geo-economic zones, away from geopolitical zones. So it's not like Kogi, for example, has more in common with Edo, with Odo and Ekiti. So they can form a common geo-economic zone. The same way that the states like Plateau, Nasarawa, and parts of Kaduna have something in common more. Niger State has more in common with Kebbi, Sokoto, and Kwara. So you can, it's a matter of, you know, reconfiguring. So you now look at what do we do jointly along this zone that can yield and export competitive services or economy or poor commodities. And the government will use foreign policy and other actual policies to support it for the purpose of spurring the economy in this area. So that everybody will be in their location and prosper within the framework of national development. We don't have that now. What we have is ad hoc arrangements, ad hoc and haphazard economic policies and programs that are resulting from knee-jerk approach to solving problems in an emergency manner. We don't have a sustained program of action or a policy framework that ties the economies of the various locations in Nigeria to an export of the economy. But at this point, it has to be a deliberate political solution to arrive at this. I think I'm hammering on that. The political parties are supposed to be the ones itemizing, aggregating, and articulating these things you're talking about. Political parties. It will be the basis for going to government. It is easier that way. It has to come from the political parties. It has to be their own beliefs that look, we need to do so and so to achieve so and so. But unfortunately, our political process is broken. It cannot yield fruit. So I'm hoping that with the kind of problems we are facing today in Nigeria, our economic problems are actually an existential threat to Nigeria as a nation, just as our insecurity is. So I'm expecting that people that are just like the president of Nigeria today must begin to think, oh, this is not going to be business as usual. As you put your money around, pay money to delegates already, that's a recipe for disaster going forward. Because they want to recoup that money, and the same system we are putting up will continue. Until God knows when. We want to see thinkers. And Nigerians should vote for thinkers. It's a political decision we want to make now as a people and as a nation. Thinkers. Those that have the capability to create wealth. Don't vote for someone that will come and give you money. Otherwise, we won't have anybody to blame going forward. We need critical thinkers now. And for me, even the political parties should know that we cannot afford this waste anymore. So they should be at the forefront of bringing about a critical thinking that is needed now to push our political economy forward. We are in their situation. Let me tell you, we are almost in Zimbabwe, economically. We are almost in South Sudan and Sudan, security-wise. So you see, it's a problem that has both security and economic dimension. So we cannot afford to make a mistake in 2023 by voting for certain kind of tendencies that have stepped us where we are today.
Thank you so much for your thoughts on the National Economic Headline Story this Friday. We're moving over to the last speaker we have in our menu. So we have so many comments on the program. We cannot be everything now. We are moving over to the last paper we have on our menu, and that is this day. This day says, be firm, fair to all party members, Buhari charges APC chairman. Be firm, fair to all party members, Buhari charges APC chairman. Says he will continue to entrench democratic principles in governance. Adamu, that is the APC chairman, I'm now in charge. That is headline story of Rwanda.
You see, I'm not very optimistic about what the president is saying about the prospect of the APC and even the PDP at that to become the kind of party you want to see. It is because our president, like many other potential, do not understand the importance of the political party, yeah, that he can actually support somebody like Abdullah Adamu, the Republican chairman of one of the wise policy party like the APC. And who belongs to the STD. He was a founding member of the PDP, governor of the PDP. He was a staunch ally of President Obasanjo, the Republican supported third time. If he was a member of the APC, he was like 2014 when he became clear that the PDP was safe and everybody jumped into the APC. In line with what I'm saying, what are we talking about? We had thought that if the president had failed in another every aspect, political party management, he should have known that what was needed at this time for the APC was a huge effort. Somebody understands this issue more than I do.
Yes.
I can articulate more than I can do now. Somebody who is forward looking, who understands that the political party is the happening job, is the occupation ground for progressive ideology on how to build a nation that can guarantee security for the citizens. And so we need to bring in such people into the party now to begin the process of correcting how leaders are recruited democratically from the party. So you discover that if you bring in such kind of people, patriotic philosophy in everything that you do, the quality of aspirants in the next position from the APC will signal hope. We will see people that have what it now really takes to deliver. And the process of growth will be devoid of corruption. There will be internal democracy. The party will set rules and even criminalize, if possible, monetary inducement. Because parties need to do that now. Parties need to ban monetary inducement and criminalize it and prosecute anybody that is found trying to use money to induce people. Because that person does not mean well for Nigeria. Anybody who pays money for delegates now, in this a country that is bleeding like this, does not mean well for this country. So the parties and the managers of the party are supposed to be the ones to ensure that the guy, the party and his membership voting for only the best that would emerge without having to pay too much money. So that they don't have the burden of trying to recoup their investments. And can now go ahead and implement the party manifesto to the letter. Unfortunately, we saw an omission coming in as secretary. We saw Abdullah coming in as public chairman. The regular old people taking over the party. So, but your paper reported that the PDP has taken over the APC.
Yes.
And this is a party you blame for destroying Nigeria in 16 years. And you have found the party to element within that party that we are part of that destruction in that 16 years talking about. So what hope does APC now hold for the ordinary Nigerian that is looking up to political party for leadership? Now, if you look at the sales of the cost of nomination forms of the PDP, we're not seeing that of the APC. It might not be different. It tells you that this is a highly monetized, money-inducing enterprise. Another, all of us have said it several times, we're not frustrated with this, that our political process has degenerated into a criminal franchise of power grab or power project, essentially. The current constitution of the executive committee of the APC does not indicate that there will be a change from this pattern going forward. So if these same people are the ones that will throw up the next political leader, what hope do we have that they can do the immediate turnaround in this country? There's no hope. And it's the same thing with the PDP. There's no hope.
The PDP doesn't seem to have learned its lessons.
They have not. The APC have not learned lessons. give you a lot of lessons. So like us are now left in a limbo, having to choose from bad or worse, or both. We don't even know. So our democracy has been delegitimized by the players in the politics. The greatest danger to our democracy today are the politicians themselves. Because they are anything but democratic. They have refused to play democracy by the rules, by the other rules governing democracy, which is morality, ethics, and patriotism. You know, I hear people talk about things like why is not giving, is taking, and I laugh. That's not the democracy. You know, democracy is given freely by the people to whom they want to give it to. You can't take it from them. It shouldn't be taken. But you have governors, you have people that are in the politicians, Democrats, making this claim, the power is not given, it is taken. I begin to wonder where we are. You have people quoting Machiavelli in a democracy. Forget that Machiavelli was a piece of literature that was written in a lawless society of Italy. It was not supposed to govern it was not the rules governing the basis of a democratic society. And people imbibe it and justify it and rationalize it. There should be nothing Machiavellian in a democracy. There should be nothing like power is not being but taken in a democracy. Power is given freely by the people, easily. And so taking back from you when they feel you're not doing the right thing. So you can see that there's a depth of democratic thinking among our Democrats. So how can democracy work for us? All over West Africa, democracy is failing. Not because democracy itself is a failure, but because we as a people have failed democracy as a system of government. We have failed democracy. I will keep failing democracy. I would like to apply Adamu and co run our political parties. We are set to fail democracy more going forward. And so it's not a matter of being fair to anybody. You cannot be fair when you imagine the manner you imagine. He was not voted for. He was imposed. So what fairness are you talking about?
Thank you so much, thank you so much for taking our time to be with us this Friday.
Thank you very much.
We'll be some of the papers. But if you ask me, it's well, quality day on today's society, and we are good to see you next week. Remember, safety is a personal responsibility now, so you have to play safe and keep yourself safe. I remember you from the football. Have a beautiful weekend. Bye.
This program is brought to you by Leadership Podcast from the stable of Leadership Media Group.